Welcome to your home for compelling conversation on topics that impact Canada's fire service. I'm retired Fire Chief Tom DeSourcy, and this is Firefighting in Canada, the podcast.
In what has become an annual check-in, if you will, on the fire service in Canada, it's a pleasure to once again welcome the president of the Canadian Association of Fire Chiefs, the Chief of Emergency Services in Red Deer, Alberta, Ken McMullen, joins us today from the Wild Rose State. Is that the
Wild Rose Province?
Welcome. Nice to have you back on the podcast again.
It's always a pleasure. I still listen to all the great work that you're doing there, Tom, and thanks for finding interest in our stories yet again.
You've certainly, as I've alluded to, been on the program before, and we've spoken about your community of Red Deer, and I want to just touch on that again. You've been there since what, 2018, I think?
Yeah, it was. Good memory. 2018, February of 18, I came to Red Deer as the chief, yeah.
What's new? What's changed since your tenure, in your tenure?
Yeah, you know what? We continue to evolve and react, I would say. You know, the service continues to increase on our call volumes. I would say, like many fire departments in and around Canada, we are seeing a heavier reliance on medical first response. You know, I'll remind your listeners, Red Deer's a little unique. Our staff are integrated, so our staff are both paramedics and firefighters, but our paramedics are still a part of the bigger system called Alberta Health Services Ambulance Service. So I don't have direct control over where the ambulances go every day. The staff report to me, but their whereabouts are certainly not mine. They're dictated as part of the provincial system. So the medical first response, no different than your other communities, our firefighters are attending medical calls, and it might work out that the ambulance coming is another member of Red Deer Emergency Services, but it might be one of the other contracted services or Alberta Health Services themselves. So we do continue to see, and I think that's pretty standard across the services, this reliance on our fire departments to stop the clock and to start getting some sort of care to people that need it as soon as possible, and we're going to continue down that path. So I think that's a big change. Tom, the other continued issue that we always look at is the mental health of first responders. How are we doing in that? And we have to continually gauge how we're doing with our mental health. And it's one of those things that I don't want to get too far down this path, but the reality is, the more we educate and train individuals on recognizing signs and symptoms of workplace-related injuries, you will and should naturally see an increase of people going off because they're taking the right steps to address these issues sooner rather than later. And unfortunately, statistically, it looks like, oh my gosh, you've got this big rise of people taking time off for leave. I combat by saying that, you know what? I think it's an okay thing. Let's identify it earlier. Let's get the right treatment on for individuals so that we can get them back sooner and that they're here for the long run.
What does your experience, at least Red Deer's experience in the medical side of things, what does it do for you when you speak with other chiefs, other firefighters across Canada, which you often do? Do you have a lot to glean from that?
Yeah, you know, even in the Alberta model, there are only 7 fire departments in Alberta that run an integrated system. So we have a little bit of a different understanding when we talk about medical first response and how much value that medical first response has in the overall success of that patient outcome. And I know that many, many fire departments are struggling with, is it the right business to be in, or can we afford to stay in this business of medical first response? And so I get to share a bit of an opportunity around what works for us in the city of Red Deer and how it's beneficial. And I think that just overlays to the benefits that other communities can do on this whole medical first response program.
If the fire service, and I tell people this quite often, if the fire service doesn't choose to provide that service, I guess the question remains, who will?
We could leave that awkward silence right there, Tom, because there's no answer. There is nobody, right? The fire department is. You and I have known this long enough. If it doesn't involve guns and it doesn't involve, criminal aspects, the fire department gets called.
Exactly. To the home province of Alberta and to talk about the mental side, mental wellness side. It's been another trying time for the fire service and the residents, certainly following another devastating wildfire season. You were on the ground in Jasper this summer. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to get too far down in that path, in all fairness, Tom, but I was there, as I often have the opportunity to go as a member of Canada Task Force 2, one of Canada's six heavy urban search and rescue teams. And so I was there, played for a period of time an incident commander role during Jasper wildfires. Wow, what an event, right? You think about the collaboration, you think about the amount of people that came in. What was most unique about Jasper was the tri-government scenario that we were in. So Jasper is in federal land. Parks Canada has the jurisdiction. Yet the Alberta government plays a role in there, and the municipality plays a role in there. So when you have the prime minister, the premier, and the mayor all in the same room, coming at it from a little bit of a different angle, that created a little bit different. The other events I've been on with Canada Task Force 2 in other provinces or territories have not had that triple component that Jasper brought. But, you know, I think the other reality, as you talk about what happened in the Jasper wildfire, there was a tragic loss of life. And I never discount the opportunity to remind people of the loss of Morgan Kitchen, a young gentleman that passed away tragically during that fire. And one that we need to remember and remind individuals just how dangerous the job of wildland firefighting is. And the but to that is there's work to be done. Municipalities will be called more frequently than not to assist with our colleagues in wildland. And are we as prepared as we need to be? And you know, I think as we continue our relationships with groups like CIFSE, the Interagency Forest Fire Center, we will continue to improve our working relationships with our colleagues in wildfire.
You've seen changes. I mean, you've been involved in what, Fort Mac and other events, and certainly not to get on down an operational path, but you've seen the positive side of the changes that the relationships have made.
Huge. You know, I can't remember when that statement was first shared with me. Don't ever wait until an emergency to share a business card or a contact. And I've lived by that. I've lived by having relationships before the time you need them. And so I used me as the example, but the reality stands the same. Get to know your colleagues, get to know the supporting agencies in and around your community, because that is what is consistent. The need and the reliance on one another is consistent. It doesn't matter what the event is, insert fire here or incident here. You will always, always be working in a collaborative room with a collaborative approach. And so as we continue to learn from these events and you know, it sounds like we always talk about Alberta, but the reality is data is what it is. We can't dispute the facts. Alberta just sees its far greater share of major events than other provinces and territories. So Alberta's got some experience on what's that collaboration look like? How do we work within different systems, federal, provincial, municipalities, while we go through there? So there's lots of learnings. The after action reviews on all of these different events will give you one piece of learnings that we can improve from, so that we always are striving to be better.
Over to the national side of things, you've been the president of CAFC, the Canadian Association of Fire Chiefs. This is your second term for three. This is your third year. What about some of the accomplishments that have taken place in your time and in just previous to that? What are you most proud of?
Well, hey, thank you so much. And thanks to you, your listeners, all the members. I was fortunate to be acclaimed for a second term this last September. So I am in the chair for the foreseeable future. Another 2 years ultimately would be the goal of that. And I just have to say that the membership continues to increase. So we had the greatest number of attendees and sponsors and vendors this last September in Montreal, where we had a great conference. We are moving the needle, and I have to use examples like the doubling of the volunteer firefighter tax credit. And hey, I've been interviewed many times. Is it exactly where we wanted it to go? No. But did we double it? Yes. And it gives us some runway to keep talking. And I know we'll talk about it here shortly, Tom, but next week's Government Relations Week, we're not stopping the conversation about the Volunteer Firefighter Tax Credit. Number one, we're thanking politicians. I think that when we get a chance to have some airtime and face time with them, we say thank you, because it is because of their support that we had that Volunteer Tax Credit increase. It's also a reminder that we've got a little ways to go on that front. So Volunteer Firefighter Tax Credit, I think, was a huge accomplishment. Our continued voice and a reliable source for federal government to come to for advice, I think, is improving. We're getting invited to meetings with all levels of federal government, which we hadn't seen in the past. And it wasn't for lack of trying. I think it's one of those notions that they finally have accepted us as a reliable source, and that we're providing them good data. I'll close that by saying the fire census, the Great Canadian Fire Census, we are now in our fourth year. And next week, my friend, I'm clapping, next week we'll be releasing the results of the 2023 year stats. And that data is so important for us to be able to use tangible information when we are out, not only in federal government, but it gives municipalities and locals the ability to use that same data on their own issues in their own municipalities.
As you have alluded to, in fact, as we record this, we talk about Government Relations Week, and again heading to the Hill, Chiefs on the Hill in Ottawa. That lobby effort, and I've been a part of that a number of years ago, has seen some results. And you talk about the firefighter, the volunteer tax credit. What about this time around? What's hot on the lobby list, as it were, when you hit to the Hill?
Thanks again. We are going to once again, and it sounds like a little bit of a broken record, but we are advocating continuously for the creation of a national fire administration for this country. And we are still on that. We are talking to anybody that's willing to listen on the value of the National Fire Administration. I'll come back to that, because I just want to highlight the other ask. We're going to continue to talk about re-implementation or maturing of the Joint Emergency Preparedness Program. You knew it, formerly known as JEP. I know it as JEP, but people that aren't familiar with 2013, 2014, that is the opportunity where the federal government supported with matching of funds with municipalities on the purchase of specialty equipment and specialty training. And so we are going to, once again, show the data that tells you that there is certainly a need out there to re-implement and mature some sort of JEP funding. Safety items, lithium ion batteries. As you know, we're doing a lot of work on lithium ion batteries. We're ready to talk to politicians about that. Single means of egress, or in another way, we call it one way out. We are ready with information to talk about what is the risks of single means of egress, and particularly what are the firefighter risks for one way out. And we're changing the narrative on that. So really, that's at the highest level. We try not to go in with 10 asks, because these are elevator speeches, as you know from your time there. We don't get a lot of time with our politicians, and we want to give them a space to share what they want to share as well. But we certainly go in with a great deal of information on 3 to 4 topics, and those are the ones that we're coming at this year.
You talked and alluded to the Federal Fire Administration, and I want to go deeper into that, much like the U.S., and give us, if you haven't heard of it before, for those listeners that may not be familiar, what does a federal administrator do?
The United States is our closest, best example. 1976, the establishment of the U.S. Fire Administrator. Under the U.S. Fire Authority, which is part of Department of Homeland Security, That's kind of the makeup of how it's created. More importantly, to your question and to the listeners, the value of a fire administration is a voice at the federal level for any items related to fire. And some great examples, the United States have a wonderful training academy. Now that they have 150 staff, it's been established over 50 years. We know we're not going to get there tomorrow, but we need to start somewhere. And our plea is, let's get somewhere, 1, 2 positions within the federal government at a senior level to help advise on fire-related issues. We recognize that there are over 13 divisions of federal government that have some component of fire-related topics. new construction, lithium-ion batteries, fireworks and explosions. The list goes on, where when we're not at the table, as a fire chief that you were and a fire chief that I'm at in our community, we then get introduced to the topic when it's a done deal. And you're told that, by the way, they are bringing in a lithium ion battery storage facility in your community. Now what? Or we are looking to build 3 million new homes in our country in the next 10 years, but can we do it the safest way possible? We believe that there's a voice that's missing at those tables earlier on in the conversation, and that is the key role of a National Fire Administration. And in closing, we are absent where every other country of our size has a position similar to this in their countries. We're really just behind the ball.
Anytime, you know, you deal with politics, and certainly things change, and we've had a change in the United States. Is that a concern with the fire administration at their level?
It certainly is a concern. In the model of the United States, the fire administrator is appointed by the sitting president. And so the fire administrator, who we've all known to grow and love, Dr. Lori Moore Merrill, her term will end at the end of this year. And I can just tell you on a very personal note how disappointing that is for me. She has been a steadfast supporter of the Canadian Association of Fire Chiefs in all of my years involved in the CAFC, not just as the board member or the president, but over 26 years involved with the CAFC. We have never had the support of the U.S. Fire Administrator like we did in the last 2 years. And so it's a very sad loss for us. However, that's not to say we won't continue to have a great relationship and lean on our colleagues at the USFA. We just don't know whom that's going to be in a couple months from now.
I certainly don't expect, you know, you in terms of the association to pick favorites here in Canada, but it is quite realistic. We could see a change in government. What does that do for government relations? How does that refocus the association when it comes to dealing with a new government, perhaps on the Hill?
You're so well suited in this question because your timing couldn't be better. When we're talking to chiefs, 50 of us are going to be on the Hill next week. We remind them, we are pragmatic. We are not political. We will go to whomever is in power at the time. And our issues shall not and should not be used politically. Now, we know that sometimes they do, but our approach is not about the politics behind it. Our approach is about the pragmatic solutions that we are able to provide government on issues that should not be political. That being said, the reality is, as you very well know in your times being on the Hill, we will make gains and get commitments from sitting ministers that literally overnight can turn into dust. And we are back to square one, in some cases, introducing new leaders of even who the CAFC is, even though we've been around for over 100 years. There are some that have had no need to engage with the Canadian Association of Fire Chiefs or what it is that we bring. If there was a change in government, there's no doubt we would be back to educating many, many new leaders in our government. We have, on that note, requested meetings with the leaders of all parties while we're in Ottawa next week. None of them have been confirmed yet, but that's not new. We generally don't get our confirmed schedules until the morning of or even throughout the day during government relations. You know this from your time. But we have invited meetings for all leaders of all parties.
It's a fire thing, you know. I mean, it's like the same. We're used to being able to deal with whatever comes our way, right? I mean, it's fire burns in Red Deer the same as it does in Hope, British Columbia. So it's so no different. We respond the same way. So it's an interesting comparison.
Always.
I want to talk about the volunteer side, and you talked about the tax credit. That's one part of it. I had a conversation with our mutual friend, Randy Schroeder, on the podcast, and I alluded and brought up the fact that maybe it's time to rebrand the volunteer service and the term volunteer. We need a more sustainable volunteer service. What are your thoughts?
I love it. Well, first of all, I'm glad you're talking to another Albertan and a good friend and colleague of mine. So if Randy, you're listening to this, kudos to you. You're right. And I think that what's most, you know, I'll probably sound a little granular on this, but even the definition a volunteer has changed. And we, when you talk about changing the narrative, that's a reality. If you just tick the term volunteer, you might assume that you're talking about your neighbor who's a soccer coach or your other neighbor who volunteers at the food bank, which are both very noble causes, don't get me wrong. It is different than the men and women that volunteer to run into burning buildings or to go to graphic, horrible motor vehicle collisions. That is a different level of volunteer. And the reality is, in most Canadian municipalities, there is a degree of remuneration. Hence, why we wanted to have a tax credit is to offset some of the expenses that it takes to be a volunteer firefighter. So, you know, it's a very legitimate question. I think it's one that, that the fire service is going to have to look at. I'll remind your listeners, 126,000 firefighters in this country, of which about 80,000 are volunteers. So the percentage continues to rely heavily in this country on the volunteer sector. We need to do whatever we can to make sure that we're appropriately recognizing, titling them, identifying them in the most appropriate way. And I think we've got some room for improvement.
The CAFC, I think you would agree, is in a pretty strong position right now. Been some tumultuous years in the past. But I'm sure that that you, for one, are optimistic for the future.
You bet. And you're right. When you look at a time period, you're going to find highs and lows. And the Canadian Association of Fire Chiefs has certainly had both financially, reputationally. And I would suggest that we're on a very positive trajectory heading in the right direction, again, with memberships. We continue to find opportunities to find new members. It's not just chiefs that are a member of this association. We have chief officers of all ranks, and we have aspiring leaders that want to join this organization to interact with wonderful people like yourself that are mentors in different programs. And so, yeah, I'm very, very optimistic. I know that my time leading this organization will be a very tough day. That'll be a tough podcast for you and I to do in some time from now, because literally, as you know, 26 years of my life, and I've only been 28 years in the fire service, so 26 years I've been associated in some way, shape, or form with the Canadian Fire Chiefs. And so when I step away from the presidency, that'll be a difficult day for me, but I know that that's okay, because the foundation is set that no matter who's in these positions, we will continue to do good work.
I've long recognized that certainly what happens at the national level will eventually impact everyone at the local fire level. Shameless plug, and I want to close with the fact that you have a chance to encourage the fire service who are not involved to become involved in the association.
Yeah, you bet. Please do. And I'm repeating what you're saying already, Tom. There is something for everybody in this organization. The just the breadth of the committees and working groups that are out there, you will find everything under your imagination for components that are relative to the fire service that you will get some value out of. So please do consider being a member if you're not already. There is something there for you.
I appreciate your time and the update. And again, continue the good work you and the association are doing.
Right back at you. We're very, very proud of the relationship with you. And thanks for what you continue to do, even in your new role in retirement.
This has been Firefighting in Canada, the podcast. For more episodes, visit firefightingincanada.com.